Now, Roger Goodell, the commissioner, at the podium.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have traded the 7th pick to the Buffalo Bills. With the 7th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Buffalo Bills select Josh Allen, quarterback, Wyoming.
Tre'Davious White, defensive back, LSU.
Jermaine Edmonds, linebacker, Virginia Tech.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I am your host of Locked On Bills. Welcome to this Water Cooler Wednesday edition of the podcast, becoming one of my favorites each week, where I get a chance to interact with somebody from the Bills Twitter community, bring them on the show, and have an organic conversation regarding the Buffalo Bills, getting another voice on the podcast that can challenge my opinions and bring some new ideas to the table. And this week, I am joined by the co-founder, of Buffalo Fanatics, Rico Bellany. Rico, I am thankful for you being on the show here today, and I love following along with the work of Buffalo Fanatics. You guys do such a great job of creating good discussion about the Buffalo Bills.
I appreciate you having me on, my good man. We try to share things that the common fan is thinking, the things that we want to discuss, the things you're discussing at work with your friends. So we try to bring it onto a bigger platform. So we got a lot of work to do, but we're doing all right. We're doing all right for ourselves.
Well, and that's why I really wanted to get you on. When I made the list of people to get on for Water Cooler Wednesday, I'm like, this is literally kind of like the embodiment of what we get with Buffalo Fanatics, where the discussion is always being advanced. You've challenged me a lot with different ideas that I just find coming through you guys on Facebook or Twitter, and really kind of make me think about some different things. So I love what you guys are doing there, and everyone needs to check it out. It's Buffalo Fanatics. You can find, you're on every platform, a lot of good stuff on YouTube, Facebook,
absolutely,
Twitter. Real quick on the handles, tell the people.
We try to be on every platform because, I mean, here's the thing. Not everybody is on YouTube. Not everybody is on Twitter. A lot of our people are on Facebook. So we try to hit every platform, every crevice, so you're not missing a beat on anything Bills. I mean, there are people that are across the nation, I'm in Canada, my friend. So there are people that want to know Bills, and they just don't have the access to the local WGRs. And, I mean, I don't know a lot of the local stations out there, but Buffalo Fanatics allows we have a platform to hit every crevice on the globe. So I'm thankful that we have a platform to do this, and I'm thankful that I'm here on the show and we're chatting it up.
Awesome, awesome. So you are from Canada. You're in Canada. Originally from Western New York, or what?
Man, I'm born and raised in Canada, my guy.
All right, and so just why are you why the Bills? What's the draw there for you?
Why the Bills? You know what? I'll tell you something that's crazy. It was Super Bowl game, and it was the Dallas Cowboys versus the Buffalo Bills, and it was a luck of the draw. From a flip of a coin, I could have been a Dallas Cowboy fan, but my brother chose the Cowboys. I chose the Bills. I loved the logo at the time. I was a young kid, and I've been following ever since. So that's my squad, man, but I was that close to being a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I hate them to death, so that's crazy.
Oh, look at that. That's very interesting. Well, you're the man for sticking through even post the Super Bowl run there. So, you mentioned that Super Bowl against the Cowboys. Is that your earliest Buffalo Bills memory?
It's funny because, if you ask me my earliest memory, it would be, it's not a good one. It's the constant losing of the big game. So, It's a low point, but when I want to think of a high point, it's my first Monday night game, and that was, funny enough, it was against the Cowboys, that heartbreaker. Now, a lot of people would say, geez, you don't want to take that, but that was the first time that I could go to a Bills game. It was live. It was at night, Monday night. The late, great Stuart Scott was commentating on the game. Steve Young. It was an experience, right? So I go as far as that to say that was one of my most memorable experiences. But early on, I'd say those Super Bowl losses, man. Those ones killed me, man. Those killed me.
You bring it up. Is that the Nick Folk game where he made that long field goal at the end on Monday Night Football? Is that the Cowboys?
Yes. Yeah. You know it. Listen, you can hear pin drop. I heard grown men crying. Listen, man, I experienced everything from the highs to the lows, and that made me love the team and the city even more. So, yo, man, that's my squad.
So you were there. You were at the stadium for that game.
I was there for it. Men were crying. You could hear a pin drop. It wasn't very good. It wasn't good. It was great, but it was good.
I remember watching from my living room, and just it was funny because the Cowboys were really good at the time, and I had been getting text messages and stuff all during the game, like, "Oh wow, you guys are doing great, going to beat the Cowboys," and then just sucked.
And at the time, I mean, I was close enough that I could see the size of these guys. I mean, I remember seeing Marshawn Lynch and how big of a man that dude was. If you remember Anthony Hargrove. So when I saw these guys up close and in the end zone, it was an amazing experience. And then you see guys like Jason Witten, T.O. was on the squad at the time. So it was fun. It was fun.
All right. Next question for you. Ranch or blue cheese?
I'm gonna get killed for this one, man. I'm gonna get killed for this one, but neither.
Oh,
I do neither. I either go naked or, yo, I'm getting killed, but I do sour cream. Sour what? Cream. People are going to be like, exactly what you just said. What? Sour cream? Yeah, listen, man. Anytime that we – anytime up here and they don't offer us the blue cheese or the ranch, it's usually it's like a side of sour cream that goes with it. That's all I know. Now, I'm not going to hate on either one. I mean, people have their different tastes for different things, but I do naked or I do sour cream. You heard it here first. I don't care what anybody says at me.
I had thought about taking this question off because I'm like, I'm going to ask this question every Wednesday and they're going to say blue cheese and we're going to move on. But I am glad I didn't, because I have learned something, that even sour cream was an option. So very bold of you for being honest here.
Don't knock it till you try it. I'm telling you.
Oh, that's terrific. All right, let's move on here. Your favorite Buffalo Bills player of all time.
Stevie Johnson. Stevie Johnson is my favorite player, and I don't shy away from saying it. Listen, everything about Stevie Johnson is Buffalo. If you really look back before Stevie Johnson, you had, you know, your Jim Kelly's, and you had that era. But then you have the younger crowd that comes in, and nobody was really repping Buffalo because Buffalo was known to not be a winning squad. So Stevie Johnson was like, the hell with this, man. I'm going to rep for the city. I'm going to go hard. Like, even in urban areas, he's repping for his squad. So and not only that, he brings fire to his game, to the city. He gets everybody wild up. And to this day, he still reps for Buffalo. So Stevie Johnson, that's my guy. I'm still rocking with Stevie. That's my favorite Bill player of all time.
You know, I love that answer and the reason you gave the answer, because you're right. There was that period of time where you had this team that was so closely connected to the fans, and then kind of a run there where those personalities didn't exist. But Stevie Johnson really kind of a catalyst in bringing that dynamic back from the players to the fan base.
Absolutely.
Most underrated Bills player of your lifetime.
Most underrated. Oh, that's a tough one, man. I struggle with a couple players. One of them being Terrence McGee.
Mm.
I really like Terrence McGee. You could count on him to make a big play for you in the return game. But the one that stands out the most to me right now is number 94, Aaron Schobel. Aaron Schobel, underrated. Not talked about often, but if you really look back at the defensive players that we've had on the Bills, aside from Bruce Smith, he's been he's the second best pass rushing lineman we've had since Bruce Smith. But you don't really hear Aaron Schobel's name that much. So I'm going to say Aaron Schobel.
Yeah, you know, that's my answer as well, Aaron Schobel. I love the Terrence McGee reference there, because you're right. I mean, from not only just what he did as a kick returner, but a really solid corner.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. He's actually my inspiration for doing draft work is Terrence McGee, because I had went, you know, into that draft year just so fired up, had done all this work. I'm going to know all the picks. And then in the fourth round, they took Terrence McGee, and I was humbled because I never heard of him. I'm like, oh my God, I did all this prep work and I didn't even know the Bills' fourth round pick. And so my motivation from that point was like, no, the Bills are never going to draft a player at any point in the draft that I've never heard of. And it's really been my fuel for doing draft work. And then Terrence McGee went on to have such a great career. So I'm glad that he was my motivation there.
There you go. You know what's funny? It's funny that you just mentioned what you said, because you said, like, you didn't know who it was at the time, and you prided yourself on knowing who's who, and you're like, who Terrence McGee? It prompted you to do your homework. The last, I'd say, several years has gotten me diving a little deeper into who players are before draft. Before, I would just wait for the draft and let it happen and root for whoever's there. But I want to know who is coming onto the team. And you said it best. Like, you want to know who, what they're bringing to the team. So it forces you to do some homework. Now, I may not dive as deep as you do. I'm still working on that part. But it's a definitely cool thing to really attribute to really diving in and trying to learn about players and finding out what they bring best to the table and how they're going to really do with your team. So pretty cool to know that.
Yes, absolutely. Let's see here. If you had to guess, the one Bills player most likely to make the Pro Bowl in 2019 is?
Jordan Poyer.
Oh, I like it.
I'm going to say Jordan Poyer. It's easy to go Trey White, you know what I mean, because he's been on the cusp. But I think Jordan Poyer is knocking on that door, man. He's banging. He's police knocking on that door. I think he's going to get his way into this year. I hope he does.
Yeah, I mean, and that'll be setting himself going up into a contract year in 2020 where, I mean, he's already outplayed that four-year, $12 million deal, man.
Listen, he has uploaded, he's outplayed it and some. So I think this might be the year that he really knocks on the door and opens the door and gets himself set up for a Pro Bowl year.
Well, your answer to my question about Branch or Bellucci's didn't disappoint. And so I'm setting the bar high for this next one here. Your worst Buffalo Bills jersey purchase ever.
My worst purchase ever. Yo,
come on now. You got a Lozman jersey. You've got a James Hardy. What do you got, man?
I have classics. I don't know if I have any one that I hate. Like my favorite is my OJ Simpson one, but most people would say I'm not a fan of that. So I'm going to say Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor is my worst Bills jersey ever. I still got that. I'm trying to sell it. Anybody want it?
Buffalo Bills playoff quarterback Tyrod Taylor. So
we can ante up on that. I like that.
Yeah, and he gave the Bills a third round pick. So you know what? I know that he was frustrating at times, but you know the Bills don't make the playoffs without Tyrod Taylor, and they don't have the draft capital that they used last year to move up and go ahead and get Edmonds and Allen. So we could be thankful for Tyrod and be thankful that he's playing elsewhere.
Look at you putting some work in for Tyrod Taylor. I respect it. I respect
it. Like he worked so hard, man. Like he was just a little bit underdeveloped in terms of his passing game. Let's just be honest with it. But I mean, I think we can reflect now and say he did some good things for the
Bulls. Listen, I'm gonna keep it a buck. I was a fan of Tyrod. I rooted hard for Tyrod. And I think because I rooted so hard for him is what made me kind of just fall off the end of the earth for him at the same time, because you want someone to succeed so bad and they just don't live up to your expectation. And then we talk about this, we take the goggles off and you really start seeing what it is. Then you kind of say, he's not that good. So, I mean, it comes to it. I mean, we can't hate. He got us to the playoffs. He helped us get there. There was some memorable plays and we'll just leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
What was it Doug Marrone that always said, don't confuse effort with results? And I mean, it really, that's kind of the embodiment of it with Tyrod, where you know the guy works so hard and he's such a good dude. It just, at the end of the day, he just didn't move the offense consistently.
Well, I'll give Tyrod this though. He's one of the best dressed men I've ever seen. That boy has a stylist second to none. That boy can dress.
Yeah, he looks sharp. Yeah, the videos and pictures and stuff every week about him getting on the plane and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know.
Guy's got it together, man.
yes,
something I don't have. I don't have fashion like that for sure.
All right,
let's get into the meat and potatoes here. I have two topics that I'm bringing to the table. You have two topics that you're bringing to the table. And this is kind of fun because I have no idea what you have in mind. So I'm going to put you on the hot seat first and give myself a chance to warm up. And then we'll get your first topic to me. The first thing I want to get into with you is LeSean McCoy. And, you know, everybody knows that he regressed last year and he's very highly motivated to get to those 12,000 career rushing yards and prove that he can still play at a high level. And there was a lot of reasons that last year was disappointment, but as we go into 2019, the Bills seem very committed to LeSean McCoy. I mean, even through the last 2 years, he's been such a topic of potential trades, but the Bills are sticking with McCoy specifically because they want him in 2019. What are your expectations for McCoy, and how does Frank Gore being in the mix impact his role?
All right. I love the running back position. I played it when I was young, and I have an extra love for it, and I have an extra love for running backs themselves, from pass blocking, pass catching. I feel like they're one of the better athletes on the field. Because sometimes you got to think like a quarterback, you've got to pass block like a lineman, you got to catch like a receiver, and then you got to do your own job. So with LeSean McCoy, he just had so much going for himself. He put the pressure on him for that 12,000-yard season. He fell short of that. Nagging little injuries. Then you had, you know, the court issues and the alleged domestic issues that he was going through. There's a lot weighing on him. So this year is almost like a rebirth for him to just put those things aside and really push forward. Now, the addition of Frank Gore, believe it or not, is a motivating factor. And a competitive factor. If you think about it like this, Frank Gore being the elder statesman, as some will call it, coming in, you cannot let the older running back outshine you. It just can't happen. Because if you do, your career doesn't look good going forward. So it's almost as if you need to keep that older back at bay, and then now you need to you got to prove yourself. Because, I mean, this could be your last year prominently in this league, or you can really come forward and really step forward and really embrace this new year, new O-line, new everything, and really prove yourself. So it's 12,000 yards around the corner. I think he needs about 1,300 yards. It's very doable. It's very doable. And I think that he's going to bounce back and really do well.
You know, everybody wanted to make jokes about the age with Frank Gore and him coming in and the Bills at the time having Chris Ivory and LeSean McCoy, both over 30 years old, in the mix. And I've been pretty outspoken about how much I like the Frank Gore signing. And one of the biggest reasons why is I think it helps you get the most in terms of what's left in the tank with LeSean McCoy, because they are very tight. They work out in the offseason, but now they're going to be teammates every single day working towards the same goal. And I think, you know, iron sharpens iron. And I think that, you know, Frank Gore is a guy who loves football. And he's 36 years old. He's got over 3,000 career carries in the top five all time in rushing yards. He still wants to play. And he was really good last year for the Dolphins. And I think that having him around every single day, not saying that LeSean McCoy is not a great teammate or he doesn't work hard, but I think it takes it to the next level. A couple of guys that are super motivated, probably really care a lot about the position and really setting the tone for saying, hey, running backs can still make plays this late in their career, and really kind of redefining what has shifted the landscape of these running backs where, you know, as soon as they hit 28, 29, 30, guys, people write them off. Well, Frank Gore and LeSean McCoy have an opportunity right now to really kind of redefine that narrative. And I'm excited about what they can do together. I think that LeSean McCoy bounces back. He's a prideful dude. He doesn't want to go down with you know, another season like he had last year. And so as long as he can stay healthy, obviously the O-line's improved. Hopefully the passing game should be improved in terms of teams having to really respect the vertical game there with Josh Allen and some of the speed they now have at receiver, you know, that he's not going to see as many heavy boxes where teams aren't going to say, hey, we're just going to take away LeSean McCoy and we're going to make this quarterback throw to these bad receivers. And we can, you know, if they can do that, then they can beat us. And so I do get excited about LeSean next year, despite him coming off a bad year and being, you know, on the wrong side of 30.
Listen, I'm with you. I agree. I totally agree. I think he's primed for a solid season, I think he's going to get his name back in good favor around the league.
Yeah, we're all rooting for that. I can see it happening. And I think we were very objective, too. And I were a couple of Bills dudes, and we want to see the best. But there's plenty of reason to believe that, look, LeSean is going to bounce back. And that's what we're all rooting for.
Absolutely.
All right. What do you got for me?
All right. Here we go. Topic is Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills. Last year, some would say disappointing. But is it Brian Daboll's scheme, or did we not have the players to execute for him? So is it a scheme that was the problem, or did we have lack of talent?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Bills' ranks in terms of points and rushing offense and rushing defense, it's pretty indefensible. The Bills were a bad unit. And, you know, there's so many things that matter that go into it. You know, you think about just first and foremost going into the year with three guys competing for the starting gig. One of them's a rookie. One of them's Nathan Peterman. And the other one's A.J. McCarron. And so you're already splitting those reps three ways. And you're not really getting a chance to grow and develop with one guy. And I think that really limited things. And then number two, your starting receivers, Andre Holmes, Jeremy Curley, Kelvin Benjamin, were all cut at various points throughout the course of the year. So not only do you not have the quarterback thing right going into the year, you don't even have your receivers right. And then they just failed to really restore the offensive line post Richie Incognito and Eric Wood and obviously Cordy Glenn. And so, you know, it's just all these things working against Dable. And I don't fault him at all for the results there because he just didn't have the talent. I mean, $50 million in dead cap space plus all of that, those new changing parts and guys that didn't perform, you know, the Bills were set up to fail on offense. And he's a proven offensive coordinator, whether that's been with the Patriots or with Alabama. And I love one thing I love about Dable last year is he tried so many things. I think the Bills ran the most different formations last year, and their predictability based on formation was among the lowest in the NFL in terms of percentage of plays run out of the same looks and those types of things. So this is a guy that tried everything he frickin' could to get this offense right. And it was never stagnant. He was never content with it. It never was, oh, well, we just got the wrong players and we're not going to keep trying. I mean, think about how different that Bills offense was. How many four different starting quarterbacks throughout the course of the year? And then remember that Patriots game that it was with Derek Anderson. I think it was a primetime game. How many different formations the Bills are going wildcat, doing everything they can to get offense. They're just undermanned. And so I'm excited about what it can look like next year with what I think is a good scheme. One thing I love about the Earhart Perkins passing game that Dable features is that it gets guys open by scheme. And there's a lot of route combinations that help guys get open down the field. And for Josh Allen, who one of his knocks coming out of college, and I think even at times last year, was, you know, just kind of layering all of the components of playing football at quarterback together in terms of all the mental layers to it, whether that's your protection, whether that's your mechanics, reading the defense, understanding coverage rotation, how your routes align with those coverage rotations and where the space is going to be. If you have route combinations that take that stress off of him a little bit and he knows where that space is going to be based on simple pre-snap reads, it really affords to take away from some of those concerns. So long story short there, I think Brian Dable was undermanned last year, excited about him having more continuity this year, Josh being the guy from day one, better talent, and I think he does have a winning scheme.
So I'm going to follow up with that very question because I've had people come to the defense of Dable due to the fact that we had the injuries, we had the inconsistent play from certain players, so on and so forth. So then I bring this to who I have these discussions with. So I'm going to bring it to you. So if you look at the 49ers, you could say that they didn't have that great a talented offensive team. However, they had a really good offensive coordinator. And I've also mentioned if you took Shanahan off that 49ers team and put him with the Bills, would he have had more success than Dable, or are we making excuses for Dable? Because if you look at that 49ers team, yes, think about that one. You look at that 49ers team, you had C.J. Beathard as one of your quarterbacks. You had who else was that? Who finished – there was that young kid that had a really good game, and then I can't remember his name at the time. Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo going down. Yeah, Marquise Goodwin was in and out of the offense. Matt Breda was on the squad. So you can't tell me that it's just lack of talent because Shanahan didn't have the greatest talent on that team, but he had them in games. What say you, sir?
I think it's a good point that you bring up there because that wasn't an excuse for them to completely fall off the rails. I will say this, if they were stagnant all year, I would probably be a little more concerned, but the way that the offense looked starting in that Jacksonville game throughout the rest of the year, we're really starting the Jets game with Barkley the week before the Jacksonville game, with the way that things evolved and got better, I think that gives me reason to believe that, hey, maybe he's look, I see what you're saying. Like other teams, there's examples, there's blueprints for finding ways to continue to move the ball despite injuries and erratic quarterback play and different quarterbacks and that type of stuff. But the offense did get better. If it stayed stagnant like it did to start the year, where we were talking about historically bad offense, I mean, just there was like stretches of quarters, like six or eight quarters in a row with no points. I mean, so I think my encouragement comes from the growth at the end of the year.
Listen, I'm sorry I had to throw that curveball at you. I just had to.
No, that's good. I like it, man. I appreciate the layered question there and the good discussion.
There you go.
You ready for my next one?
Yes, sir.
Let's flip to the draft. Everyone's excited about it. It's draft month. It's what, 3 weeks from tomorrow, we get to the first round of the draft. And so the Bills at number 9 really did a lot of things in free agency to set up more flexibility with the first round pick. I mean, 6 months ago, if I would have talked about the idea of even drafting a defensive player, you know, Bills Mafia would be rioting, right? Because everybody wanted help for Josh. Well, what did they sign, like 13 offensive players in free agency? And now we're looking at potentially some needs on defense. So let's have you call the shots, Rico. You're the general manager. You get to kind of pave the or show the blueprint of what you would do at number 9. Let us hear the philosophy.
With the in the 2019 draft, with the 9th pick, the Buffalo Bills pick. What? Listen, I got that from my boy Pierre. I'm gonna go defense, and I'm gonna go with Montez Sweat at D line. And I've been contemplating this pick. A lot of people want to go offense because we need offense. We need this. Listen, we didn't spend all that money on that O line to go and draft an O-line early that way. Now, it could go that route. We may not be satisfied with who we have, but I feel that the money that was spent on this O-line, I feel that for now, they are satisfied with what they have, and now they can work on the defense. And let's think about it. Let's dive a little deeper. We've got Murphy that I think had a decent year, nothing great, nothing to write home about. We have Shaq Lawson that is his future is in question. We have Jerry Hughes. In his last year of his contract this year. So if you go into next year, let's just say we decide to status quo and let things be, we are thin at the line. So we need to prop up our defense. This is a long game. So we need to prop that defense up. And by going and affecting the trench, because you win games in the trench, we've already addressed the O-line. We've got to address that D-line. We have to get after the quarterback. Montez Sweat with a 4-4, 4-5, 40, long arms. Reminds me of Alden Smith. You have him and Jerry Hughes on either ends. That's going to be a problem. He's good against the run, and he can get after the quarterback. So with a defense being as important to me, to everybody else, I think we go with Montez Sweat to affect the trench and get after the quarterback and change the game.
30.5 tackles for loss and 23.5 sacks over the last two seasons in the SEC.
Talk to
Rico, I think predictively that makes a lot of sense because the Bills, if we've learned anything about the Bills under Sean McDermott and then, of course, Brandon Bean last year, is that they like to draft seniors, that they like to draft guys that competed at the Senior Bowl that have prototypical size, particularly high in the draft. You get that from Montez Sweat. So I think predictively that's a really sound pick. It makes sense. I've been preaching on this podcast for a couple of weeks now that the Bills have this short and long-term concern at defensive end because really the only one that you feel really good about affecting the quarterback consistently is Jerry Hughes. And how many times do we see Jerry Hughes beat his man, but there's no complimentary rush from any other direction, and the quarterback has easy lanes to escape from, and you're kind of wasting what you're getting from Jerry Hughes is still producing as he gets older, and he's obviously in a contract year, and I'm sure he's going to want to get paid one more time before he's done, you know, and cash in on one more big payday. So you expect the best version of Jerry Hughes next year. But beyond next year, right now, the only one under contract is Trent Murphy. Well, Trent Murphy's not going to be your lead pass rusher on a top-tier defense. And so you're not going to be able to completely revamp the position in one offseason. And that's why it makes a lot of sense for the Bills to use a high pick on an edge in Montez Sweat. So let me ask you this now. If Ed Oliver was on the clock, is there any players that you can think of, any prospects you can think of that, you know, if they were on the board, you know, we say no to Montez Sweat and we go in this direction. I mean, obviously eliminating guys like Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa, who we think will go in the top three to five picks.
Listen, we had a show with my man Pierre on the Kingpin. We had a show the other day and we were talking about three potential routes that we can go in the first with our first pick. So Sweat was one of the options that I chose. I went with Ed Oliver as the other one. I like Ed Oliver a lot. I think he's dynamic. I think to me, watching film, he has a motor. Now, the knock is he doesn't have enough pass rush moves or so on and so forth, but everything else stands out. You mean to tell me that he's not going to develop pass rush moves along his career? Knock it off. If we pick him at 9, he will be disruptive. He will get after the quarterback, and he will change the game. You change games in the trench. You've seen Aaron Donald. You've seen Ndamukong Suh, the way they affect quarterback, the way they affect scheme, the way they bust open on center. If we can get a guy that can really kill the middle with, and you add El Oliver with Harrison Phillips and Star Latulele, A, you ain't running on us. And B, that quarterback better have quick feet and dancing feet because he's going to have to be going out of the pocket. And here comes Jerry Hughes. So you got to look at it that way. So I'm okay with an Ed Oliver. Actually, I'm very okay with an Ed Oliver.
All right. So it sounds like there's an internal debate with, at least with you there, that if Ed Oliver and Montez Sweat were both on the board, you're okay with either one. But
either one.
All right.
Either one. It's a tough one, but it's either one.
Are you anti tight end at 9?
I'm not anti tight end. It's just that I hate to say it, but I still believe in Kroom, Jason Kroom. I still believe he's got a little bit left in him, but 9 is just too high for tight end. Now, I will say this, though. Sometimes you can't look at what other teams are doing. You got to do things that's going to affect your team in a positive way and move the sticks. But we just spent money on Cole Beasley, John Brown. You know what I'm saying? We have Foster on the outside. We got Zay also on the outside. How often are we going to, like, where do you fit in, like, your Noah Fonts or your Hawkinsons? Like, your one's going to have to be off on the sideline. You have too many dynamic players to keep them all on the sideline. So you want to at least try to have everybody on the field. Are we going to go 5 receiver set with a tight end? I just don't see it. So I'd rather fix that defense. We're going to score points. We can find some good depth in the second round and an Irv Smith. I'm just saying, at 9 for tight end, not doing it. No, thank you.
Yeah, I like that line of thinking that the Bills have created a lot of depth at receiver. And then, you know, there are guys that can work the middle of the field in Kroom and Tyler Kroft, who they signed. So I guess I would understand yet that there's not necessarily a bigger need there than there is on getting, you know, wrecking balls on the defensive line. So I can get behind that. I'll turn it back over to you for your last question to me.
So you got me talking. So I switched up my question for you.
Right.
And something that is starting to brew amongst Bills fans everywhere. There's been chatter about new stadium chat. What say you on a new stadium, whether it be downtown or having it in the same area, but would you want an open field, open dome, like open style stadium, or do you want to close up the roof and have it a dome or something that can open up and close?
Oh man. Okay. So obviously the need for a new stadium is clear, right? Everybody wants a new stadium. They need a new stadium. The location, all that stuff, I guess we'll let really smart people figure that out. To me, the real meat and potatoes of this discussion is the retractable roof or not.
Mm-hmm.
And here, so on one hand, you know, the Bills being a cold weather team in Western New York, you know, you want that element of it being cold and bringing in Miami in December and any of these other, you know, warm teams, Tampa, you know, whatever other team that has to come up north and play in your elements. And those guys live in that stuff every single day. And so you think there's a decided advantage and you'd love to preserve that. Now, here's the thing, man. I lived in Buffalo for like 11 years, the first 11 years of my life. And then I moved to Charlotte. I'm telling you, man, my blood has thinned out. I go into the cold. And I mean, I turtle up, man. It's terrible. I was in Indy for the scouting combine this past year. I literally thought I was going to die walking outside. It was like 20, 23 degrees, something like that. And it was just so cold. And so for me, as I get into my 30s and I get more, I guess, old man-ish, I don't want to sit outside in that stuff, man. I mean, I don't want to sit outside if it's 40 degrees, let alone zero or negative 10.
You.
With the, you know? So
you.
For me, that's just tough. And it's like I don't want to be that guy, but I'm kind of being that guy that's like, I don't want to go to a game in December if it's cold. And that's, I know that's so anti-Bills Mafia and so against the grain.
They don't want to hear that.
I know. And that's the transplant in me a little bit. I guess maybe I'm going to lose some fans for that take. But hey, if you want me going to games in November, December and not watching them from my recliner with you know, my heater on, and then being able to quickly watch a 4 o'clock game or whatever, and have to deal with traffic and all the downsides of going to the game. Man, you better get me a roof.
You know what? I'm okay with having the roof. But I mean, the competitive nature. You want to be competitively. You want to have the competitive advantage in opening the roof. But I mean, if you really dig deep to it, like, a competitive advantage to who? Half the team are from warm climate areas, right? So ain't nobody really trying to play in the cold. Now, does it give you the advantage to play in the cold or not? Like, really, does it give you an advantage to draft a quarterback that played in Wyoming? Who knows? You really don't know. Either you can ball or you can't ball. But when it comes to the fan interaction for the fan themselves, it makes sense to have a retractable roof. It just does. But give yourself the option of opening up or closing, depending. I don't know, man, but it's something that's brewing right now. I figured I'd like to get Joe's thoughts on that, man. But it seems that you like that roof.
I'll tell you, I've been spoiled. I did 4 games over the last 2 years at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Oh my God, it is so beautiful in there, and obviously the comfort of it adds to the experience. But you know, I just feel like it's so comfortable, and for me as a spectator in those situations, you know, I appreciate that comfort quite a bit. So it's a fine line to walk. One thing I really respect and appreciate about what the Pegulas are doing in this process is they did that big survey, and so what they're going to do is what the fans want, right? And so, you know, I think Terry, if I'm not mistaken, he was asked about that at the league meetings, about it being a retractable roof or whatever. And he goes, I want it to be outside, but you know what, the fans will let us know. And so, you know, look, I mean, it's a majority rules type thing. And I think that they're doing a great job by soliciting that feedback for the people that actually have to buy tickets and sit in the stands.
Listen, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Like, the comfort and the ability to just enjoy your team in nice, comfortable weather with all your buddies, it just makes sense. It just makes sense.
And who knows, like, maybe, I know this is a stretch, but like, maybe if you have a dome or a retractable roof or whatever, maybe you get a Super Bowl, right? Like, to me, it opens up so many different things with concerts, you know, stadium concerts and that type of stuff, that really there's a small window where that stuff can happen in Western New York, where you can kind of attract big events potentially for your indoor stadium in a town like Buffalo, which I know would be a wonderful host for any type of event like that.
And in addition, these things matter to players. These things matter. So we get a nice, beautiful stadium with a retractable roof, and now you want to lure your players, be like, hey, listen, look at the stadium, state of the art, so on and so forth. Now players are like, Buffalo ain't so bad, man. Look at that stadium. Okay. All right.
Just survive the walk from inside to your car or wherever you're going.
Yeah. If you can survive that walk, you're good.
Yeah. Rico, anything else for me, man? This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed this discussion.
Listen, anything else? Get what? You know what? Let me give you my two-part question, because, I mean, if we're here, we might as well chat it up, right?
All right, let's
do it. So you put me on the spot for the draft at GM, and I was going to ask you the same question. So you're the GM, but here's the twist to it. You have all your 9 picks. Trading up and trading down is up to you, what you want to do. What are the key components you need to add to this team to make it a perfect team? Where do you need to add these players? What type of player do you need to make this a contending team, a playoff team, a Super Bowl contending team? What is it that we need to do? You're the draft guru, man. So I come to you, sir. What do the Bills do? What does Joe do as GM?
For me, it comes down to, obviously, I want just kind of paint a broad stroke here, right here. I think that the Bills need to get a high impact player, a guy that other teams have to account for, that a guy that affects game plans and really is part of the foundation of your roster. So first and foremost, strip the position, get a high-impact player. Now, where I think the high-impact player would be best is on the defensive line, where I just feel like when I survey the entire roster, which is looking about as good as it has in a while, I just see an absence of real difference makers on the defensive line, whether that's inside or outside. And, you know, I think that there's some quality players. I think that Star Lotulelei is a quality run defender. And I think that Shaq Lawson's a quality run defender. And I think Trent Murphy gives you quality rotational ability that has had production, but he's still finding his way back from injury. And I think Harrison Phillips is an ideal backup, a spark plug type guy that's going to fit into the rotation. And Jordan Phillips is flashy, right? He makes his big plays, but he disappears. So outside of Jerry Hughes, I just don't have high impact guys, guys that are consistently going to win one-on-one matchups and get into the backfield and make plays behind the line of scrimmage. So I need dudes that can do that. Guys that blocking schemes are going to have to say, yeah, we need to account for that guy because he's got a loaded arsenal of moves to beat me and he's got athleticism. And so I really like the guys that you brought to the table there with Montez Sweat at Oliver makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't think a Josh Allen from Kentucky will get to number nine, but that's a dude that ran circles around SEC offensive linemen all year long. If Quinn and Williams were to get to nine or get in striking range for a trade up, I think that's a perfect fit. That guy wrecked SEC offensive lines. I mean, that dude was unblockable. And I know sometimes draft guys will have a tendency to use the word unblockable a little bit loosely. Nah, dude, like Quinn and Williams is legit unblockable. And so I want a guy that is unblockable, a guy that's really going to impact the line of scrimmage, a lot of the same philosophies that you're talking about. And so for me, I think the Bills, based on the strength of this draft, particularly at the top at defensive line, are in a pretty good spot there at number nine to get a guy that can do that.
Would it be a mistake if we drafted Greedy Williams?
Yeah, I think so. I think Greedy Williams, look, I love his physical upside. He's got good size and he's got good man coverage skills. I like those things about him. He's got some good flashes of press coverage as well. There are just two things about him that I just can't get by. Number one is that his effort wanes. There are just times that he just doesn't finish plays. He stops covering and plays extended and he allows that late separation. And it happened for like the last 2 years. So I was willing to, like, after 2017, studying his tape over the summer in 2018, I'm like, all right, this has got to stop. And then it didn't. It didn't stop in 2018. And then he picks his spots when he wants to be physical and tackle. And, you know, like, that rubs me the wrong way. I want guys that want to compete in every single play, that are willing to work off blocks and make tackles and defend that D gap. And, you know, I just feel like I love the ball skills. I love his coverage ability, but you need to be a consistent competitor. And I just don't know if that's what I'm looking for in my defensive players, particularly with a top 10 pick.
I like it. Listen, man, you're a knowledgeable man. Golly, I didn't realize it, man. Yo, listen, I respect it. I completely respect it. But something tells me that you have a small love for getting an offensive player in that ninth pick, because you mentioned that tight end and you just had this, something changed in your voice. Something tells me you might want to pick a tight end at nine. Am I right?
Well, I part of it's because I think TJ Hockenson's going to be a star. I really do. I think that he's going to be in that George Kittle, Travis Kelce mold where you just have a really high impact tight end. And to me, that changes the discussion a little bit. And obviously, we can talk about all these different position groups, but none of it's going to matter if Josh Allen doesn't continue his development and become a top quarterback. And I want him to give him every chance to do that. Now, I don't want to do that irresponsibly like Doug Whaley did. But I, you know, if you have an opportunity, you think you can get a star, then I do it. And look, I'll be honest with you. I still think that the defensive line's more impactful. But the problem is I'm not necessarily as high on guys like Montez Sweat. I'm not as high. You know, for me, it's like I like this. Like Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams is great. Josh Allen, Ed Oliver, Brian Burns. To me, those are the five guys I would want. And I think there's a good chance. I just listed five guys, and then I've got a couple quarterbacks and a couple offense other players, and I got a chance to get one of those guys at number nine. It becomes a numbers thing. But if I can't, then I start to think, okay, well, maybe I would like that star tight end, but also I'm fine with the tight end at 40. I just get nervous because, you know, I think TJ Hockenson is going to go in the top 15. Noah Fant's going to go in the top 25. And then, you know, with Gronk retiring and you have the Patriots at 32, and Brady's weapons right now are horrible. And yes, you know how important that tight end position is to him. And absolutely, I feel like they're going to snatch up Irv Smith if he's there at 32.
I don't disagree. I hope I'm not taking most of your time, because I have one last question for you and I'm done.
No, man, we're here to have a water cooler Wednesday, man. Listen, still filling up my cup, brother.
So check this out, because now this is something that I'm sitting with. So we talked about the running back position. We have two running backs nearing 30 or at 30 at this point. We have Marcus Murphy as the third running back on this squad. I like Marcus Murphy. Has his inability to consistently pass block has kept him off the field. We all know that. But he's still dynamic. He can make plays. We've seen it. Now, the draft is coming up. We've got 10 picks. Let's say we don't trade up or down. Where are we grabbing a running back, and what running backs look good to you and would be a good fit on this Bills team? Because that's where I have my challenges. I'm conflicted.
Yeah, you know, I think the good thing about the Bills running back position right now is that it's probably fine, right? And the Bills can really focus next offseason on retooling that position and getting impact players, because right now, I mean, You've got Shady and you've got Franco, and you think that's going to be fine, but they're both on 1 year deals. And I don't necessarily think they're going to be priorities beyond 2019. How awesome would it be for a rookie running back to have their first year behind those two dudes? I mean, you want to talk about just a wonderful way to get acclimated to the NFL. I think it would be by playing behind those two players. And so I think with the Bills having 10 draft picks, I think seven of those are on day three, 2 4s, yes. 2 5s, uh-huh. 6 and 2 7s. You know, a lot of capital on day two, day three. And that's really where the sweet spot is, right? You there's plenty of high picks that are running backs that are really good players, but there's also a lot that are on day three. And I think that the Bills are in a really good spot to use a day three pick on a guy that can be that RB3 in 2019 behind Gore and McCoy, and then become one of the top two backs in 2020 and beyond. And it gives them at least one piece going into 2020's offseason to start, you know, retooling that position, which will be important. I think in year three with Josh Allen at quarterback, it'll be the right time for him to have some younger players at running back. And I really like that this year he's got veterans next to him in the backfield that, you know, there's not going to be any of those concerns with lining up in the right spot or protecting like they're supposed to, where next year I think he'll be a little bit more comfortable to surround himself with some younger players. So, you know, I think about day three running backs. I've always got a long list of guys that I like on day three, 'cause that's always a sweet spot for running backs. And one thing I was talking about, I think it was with, maybe it was Ryan last week on Water Cooler Wednesday, is like with running backs, you just never quite know who's going to slide, because this year's class of running backs, we don't talk much about the star power at the top. You know, last year we had three or four first round running backs, Penny, Sony Michel, you know, Saquon Barkley, obviously, and there, you know, it was a good year for running backs. And then even in the second round, there was plenty of guys that made an impact. So, you know, who's going to slide? Do guys get elevated because it's a weak running back class? Does, you know, guys like Miles Sanders and Josh Jacobs and Darrell Anderson, are those surefire day one, day two picks? Does that push Damian Harris from Alabama and David Montgomery into the fourth round? You know, it's tough to gauge, but I'm going to give a big name dump of guys that I would love on day three for the Bills
I'm curious. I'm actually very curious what you got.
Somewhat realistic day three running backs for the Bills: Damian Harris, running back Alabama; David Montgomery, running back Iowa State; maybe Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma is the player that's super talented but has injuries. You know, maybe he's a player that the Bills could be willing to take that risk, because they know that they don't need anything in 2018 from or 2019 from him. Justice Hill from Oklahoma State, I like a lot. Travion Williams from Texas A&M.
Love Justice Hill.
Ryquell Armstead from Temple, he's appealing to me. I like Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State in terms of his receiving ability. Mike Weber from Ohio State, that dude's consistent across the board, literally with anything you want a running back to do. Travis Homer, even when you start talking about late day three. So, I mean, I can give you a lot of names that I think can help you. And so that's why I don't think there's much premium on getting that addressed high in the draft. And I think there's just a long list of guys that I think can have a role starting, you know, as an RB3 in 2019 and one of the lead guys in 2020.
I appreciate that, because you gave me some names that I can go look into. I'm surprised you didn't mention Benny Snell or Miles Sanders. I'm surprised you didn't say those names, but I'm sure they're there.
Yeah, Miles Sanders, I think, is a day two guy. So I didn't include him in my day three guys. Benny Snell, I like, man. He's super competitive. I just wonder about a guy that's just, his game is all power, right? Like, when you're just a power back and there's not much else to you, I think that power dynamic is mitigated a lot at the NFL level. And so I just don't know that he gives me the multifaceted nature that I tend to gravitate towards.
I appreciate that, man. You've given me some names that I've got to now dive a little deeper and look into, because that running back position has got me thinking, like, what do we do? We just can't stick with who we got right now. Although I'm okay with Murphy, but we need that young buck that's going to take over and be that bell cow running back that we need.
You asked the question at the right time. I actually just finished all of my film work and scouting reports for running backs. I did 28 of them this year.
That's why you're so fresh.
It's fresh in my mind. I'm actually going to have an article on the draftnetwork.com here in the next day or two that'll release my running back rankings with all of my scouting reports on those players.
I'll be on the lookout for that. I appreciate it.
Rico, you've been an awesome guest and appreciate everything that you brought to the table here and obviously the great discussion. Anything that you're working on with Buffalo Fanatics that you'd like to tell the listeners about?
Absolutely. So we are going to be in this upcoming draft. We're going to be doing a live draft show on YouTube. So be on the lookout for that. We're on every single social media platform you can think of, from Snapchat to Instagram to Facebook, for those that still use Facebook, to Discord chat. You name it, we're on it. Instagram, we've got 120,000 followers combined. So we have a small movement. We still got a lot of things to do, but I'm glad our name is getting out there, because we rep the fans. We rep the people, and that's what we want to do. And we come from all over. I'm repping from Canada. We've got Pierre from Virginia. We've got Bobby from Buffalo himself. So we're trying to put something together, man. So I appreciate the platform to really talk Bills and expand.
Yeah, and follow Rico on Twitter at @RealRico_BF. Always moving that discussion forward, and you certainly did that here today on the show. Thanks so much for joining me. Everyone else, make sure that you do hit that follow button on Rico. You can follow me on Twitter at @TheJoeMarino. The podcast is on Twitter at @LockedOnBills. And make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That stuff really helps the show. Until tomorrow, thanks so much for listening to Locked On Bills.